My tribute to my father is an attempt to bring him to life by reading in his own words some reminiscences he recorded of amusing incidents over his long political career. They demonstrate his intelligence, his humor, his self-deprecation, his appreciation of those who worked with him, and his great love of life. We begin with Nijmegen, the scene of his outstanding bravery. On occasions, one's past returns to haunt one. There was to be a reunion in Nijmegen, to which I had been invited. It was, I thought, rather embarrassing, since as Secretary General of NATO, I was part of an organization which included the very important country of Germany. I thought it wise to speak first to the German ambassador before accepting. "Of course you must go," he said. It was a battle long to be remembered. I went into the town hall, in which there were about 600 people, and I couldn't see anybody that I'd ever seen before. I crossed the room and saw a familiar face, and went up and said, "Hello." We had a long and interesting conversation about how we had both won the war, and feeling that I could go on no longer on this subject, I said to him in a fatherly manner, "By the way, what do you do now?" "As a matter of fact," he said, "I am president of Israel." And indeed he was. His name was Chaim Herzog, and he'd been a gunner officer in the Guards Armored Division. On the whole, he took it fairly well. Then, describing a journey whilst High Commissioner in Australia in 1957, heading for Canberra in the High Commissioner's roles, a pea-green affair driven by Paddy Coyle in a pea-green uniform, an hour out of Sydney, he turned round and said, "Do you like my uniform?" I made a non-committal reply. "If you put me in a field, the cows would eat me," he said crossly. I arranged for a new uniform. It was harder work to get rid of the rolls, which was one of those very large cars with a glass partition between the driver and the passengers. The children refused to ride in it in case they were seen by their friends, and used to lie on the floor to avoid exposure. Nor was the glass particularly soundproof. Field Marshal Sir Richard Hull came to stay, and on the way home from the airport, he started to talk about nuclear weapons. "Can you hear me, Coyle?" I said. "Not a word, my lord," he replied. When both he and I could bear the rolls no longer, we took it up to Cape York Peninsula and drove it back to Sydney. This, I may say, was before there were decent roads anywhere north of Brisbane. At Rockhampton, the body became detached from the chassis and our mission was accomplished. Next, a story when he was First Lord of the Admiralty. Frank Twiss, that splendid admiral, detailed to look after an ignorant and ex-army First Lord, and I paid a visit to the US Navy. We were due to visit an aircraft carrier and were shown to the aircraft which would transport us there. It had no markings except COD in very large letters on the fuselage. We made an appalling landing on the flight deck, and slightly put out, we alighted. Frank Twiss, far junior to the admiral who greeted us, said, "Now I know what COD means, crash on deck." The admiral was not amused. Later, at the admiral's briefing, he told us that every day the ship's company had to parade on the flight deck and jump 6 feet from a standing start. We were shown our quarters, and I said to Frank and Alistair Jeffrey, my private secretary, I don't believe you can jump 6 feet from a standing start. We joined up. Ready, steady, go. We were in mid-air when the American Admiral opened the door and came in. Years later, when he was Foreign Secretary, there was a notable occasion in Vienna to celebrate the 25th anniversary of the signing of the Austrian State Treaty in 1955. He writes, of the four foreign minister signatories, Molotov and Dulles were dead. Nobody had ever heard of the Frenchman, Pinet, so Harold Macmillan was the centre of attention. Every time his name was mentioned, he rose and accepted an ovation. After the banquet, at about 1 a.m, we went back to the British Embassy. We sat around drinking until about 3 a.m, during which time Harold Macmillan gave a fascinating and very personal version of world events. After some time, thinking that he had rather neglected the Foreign Secretary, patting me on the knee, he said, and what are you doing tomorrow, dear boy? I'm going to have breakfast, I said, with Senator Muskie, the new Secretary of State. Oh, isn't that the man who burst into tears at a political meeting when someone shouted from the back of the hall, Mrs. Muskie is a drunk, and thereby losing the presidential nomination? For the first time, the ambassador intervened. Mr. Macmillan, that is a very harsh thing to say, he said. What would you have done if at a meeting in Hayward's Heath, a man at the back had shouted, Lady Dorothy's a drunk? Oh, said Harold, cupping his hands round his mouth. I would have shouted, you should have seen her mother. He is, I think, a greatly underestimated Prime Minister. Finally, we go to Egypt. I went to see Sadat for a meeting somewhere near Aswan. He was a very courageous and generous man who, I think, made a great contribution to a better understanding of the Middle East and, in particular, of Israel. On leaving Sadat in Aswan, we embarked on a short cruise down the Nile. Jane Peary, from my private office, was waiting in the British Embassy in Cairo to greet us when we returned. However, the ambassador had an important telegram from London, which he felt should be delivered at once. Jane and a splendid MI6 officer drove in a car to the banks of the Nile at a point where they thought they could intercept our vessel. The MI6 man climbed a railway signal pole to see whether or not he could see our boat. Jane said that the signal then went down and he fell off. But I don't know whether that's true. Anyway, it was pitch dark when they saw the lights of our vessel. They commandeered a rowing boat, and rowing furiously to the middle of the river, Jane was told to scream at the top of her voice to attract attention. This she did with no difficulty whatsoever. Happily, she was heard. We stopped, and they both came on board. He, believe it or not, dressed in a cloak and a Sherlock Holmes hat. The message was totally unimportant.